I guess I'll introduce Cassie New. Cassie?
Thank you, Mr. Santoli, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Also, my thanks and gratitude to AIM, the same thanks and gratitude to the people of America and America for having done great rescue to the suffering people. Without this rescue, I would have been killed by the communists. Since I'm not a politician, neither am I a journalist, I'm here just to briefly give you my experience during the whole time of genocidal regime, Pol Pot, and some time under the Vietnamese regime. The speculation and inaccuracy of the media caused the Capitol Hill to make a decision to abandon the war in Indochina. And in April 1975, you hear you cheer to the family reunification over there. My family, my people, and I were at tears because it was the beginning of an era of separation, destruction, mass grave, all sort of atrocity and Holocaust in Cambodia. That caused the loss of my country. I mean, it's lost now. I still have hope, but we are losing more. Pol Pot regime, April 17, 1975 to January 7, 1979, nearly 4 years. I was there the whole time. Exactly the same as what they have in other communist regime. Worse than that, they kill their own people. For any reason, no need to say, you will see later. They issue a policy of eliminating educated ones, learned. So I was classified among the educated. The executed, being a teacher of English in high school. Not only a military officer, high-ranking official or something, just a high school teacher or primary school teacher or even university student. They must be executed because they are accused of being Western-oriented. And they cannot be admitted in that new Cambodian society, new Kampuchean society. They call Kampuchean, but I still call my country Cambodia. April 17 at 9:45, black dress troop came into Phnom Penh, the capital city where I was, and then I was in my office. And we were all forced to get out of the city by telling that get out as soon as possible or American airplane will bomb the city, as you heard during the 5-year guerrilla war. Yeah, we didn't believe that, but we had no choice. Of course, many of us tried to not to move, to ignore it, but were shot dead. Shot dead on the road, in the public. So, we had to move. My family was in the south of the capital, so I moved south. Unfortunately, my wife was in the west, living with her mother temporarily, so we were separated. Same thing happened to thousands of other families whose parents or whose husband or wife worked in separate places, so separation. We were forced to live under control of the, what they call the former liberated people, which is sort of half cadre, half not, let's say, spy. Yeah, we were closely watched and controlled. Any single word we expressed was recorded and reported to the cadre. The only choice I had to do is to hide my identity, because if I didn't, I would have been identified and arrested. So this type of ruling is not different from any other communist country. But they keep relocating people from one countryside to another. So after 3 or 4 months, I was relocated to the northern part of Cambodia, province of Bat Damong. And in November 1976, the 20th of November, because of a slight mistake, I would like to go back and say that I knew that foreign languages were not allowed to be spoken in that society, even foreign mannerism. Even Cambodian type of mannerism during the Sino regime, we say kind word, respectful word, they said, no, we don't use those terms. We use a single term. We don't say your honor, we don't say sir, we say comrade. And it's hard for all of us, for the whole life, we live in a society of many different classes. Instead of using you, a single word, for someone we address to, we have many different words to address, depending to the class. So, of course, many of us made many mistakes, and that single mistake received a penalty of death. The type of investigation is very simple for them. They didn't ask us, what did you do before? They know we would lie, we would try to hide our identity. They send their kids to play with our kids. Their kids talk with our kids about this, about that, and then their kids started to ask, what did your father do before? And then the little girl said, I didn't know, but he was called honorable. Each morning, a jeep, soldier's trip, came to pick him up with a chauffeur, and he dressed up very nicely with something on his shoulders. Yeah, that next evening, the whole family, including the little girl, were taken away and disappeared. That's the way of investigation. Luckily enough, my two children were still very young, too young to be investigated. Anyway, foreign languages were not allowed to be spoken. I did slip a couple of words in English. That's my stupid mistake. While plowing land together with the other member of the team, in mobile team, where I was assigned. And that man was a former captain. We knew each other, but tried to hide our identity. He sometimes slipped to me in a couple of words in French, but I slipped in a couple of words in answering to him in English. Well, on that day, unfortunately, I heard a strange voice behind me say, hey, good brother, we are looking for a man who is able to speak American language. They don't say English because the cadre, you know, the communist cadre, they don't know English language. They said American language. Okay, that's good, that's good. That evening, I was caught, bound my arm behind, and sent straight to jail. Immediately in jail, they pulled me up to the interrogation room and started beating me up, wrapped my head with plastic cloth. This is five times. And no wonder, when you are in that plastic cloth, no way you can breathe and you went unconscious. No wonder. The accusation was I was a CIA working for an American somewhere. So they kept asking me, who were your American bosses? Give me their names. What did you do, and where were you? Yeah. Same question, and I keep denying no, no, and no, because I knew if I said yes, that yes would take my life. Yeah. They beat me up severely, of course, I fainted. During the 6 months and 18 days, of course, I counted every second in that jail. It was not a regular camp, it was an execution. The camp where they execute people. My inmates, there were tank drivers, pilots, high-ranking officers, the deputy in charge of the province of Bat Damong, the general's wives, etc. So they keep executing people every evening after the interrogation. Yeah. It was luck and a little bit of skill that I escaped the execution. Yeah, one day they decided to wipe out the jail of the 37 inmates. The remaining one was 37 in that day. Yes. A troop of army came to take us out one after another one and tie the rope to the neck, the end of another rope to another person formed in one line, but all tied up. But luckily, during that time before that, I, because of my experience with the British Broadcasting Corporation, when I worked in Phnom Penh in my office in charge of the English language teaching on television, I did some translation on the series of stories from Asia by the British Broadcasting Corporation. So I remember those stories by heart. So before that complete execution day, I told stories to those young jail guards. They were young, teenage, 10 years old. 10 years old, yes. 10 mostly, 11, 12. They carry M16 American gun, but the other end they pull on the soil like that. Yeah, they were so small, but they love listening to stories. So I gain popularity. I say popularity, because they love listening to stories. So by accident, one of my story listeners, this youngest one, was the most powerful one. He was a single son of the highest ranking officers in charge of the district. So that evening he said, in Khmer, Yung Trau Ka Vil, I need him. Immediately two other ones sneak from the other side and pull me out to hide me in a muddy pond, a whole lot of leeches, because it's a pond, mud, buffalo, water buffalo, leeches, yeah. And told me not to move, not to ask any question, not to do anything until somebody appeared, anytime, quiet. It's not easy where leeches crawl all around the body and bite here and there and the whole night. Early in the morning, the same two came up to me and took me out. So I didn't know what happened to the jail. Took me out and wiped off the mud and pulled me back into the jail. I saw new faces, newcomers. So the 36 is gone. So no wonder I knew that it's the execution. So I was saved by, let's say, God saved me, gave me that skill to save my life, escape the execution. Still, they didn't trust me. They keep following me. Spies keep coming. My spies are my story listeners among them, keep asking, could you teach me French? Could you tell me where the former prime minister's house in Phnom Penh? Yeah, they keep asking me some question without really relating to any of our regular conversation. But they keep doing that. So you got to be careful, you know, dealing with any communists. They are, well, Mr. Huang said they are very good at playing game. Of course they are. Yeah, even kids. So after 6 months and 18 days, I was released, but still under hard labor until January 17, 1979, the Vietnamese came. I could not escape yet until April 23, 1979. They tried to pull me up to the jungle with them, but on the day when they were in complete disorder, no more bullets, so I could escape with my family, but not my father, not my wife. Just my mother and my two little kids. I came to Thailand among the first floor of the Exodus, but unfortunately repatriated among the 44,000 Cambodian refugees back. We were dumped down the steep mountain of Prae Vihear, and we had to walk back into Cambodia for 59 days. But during my trip on foot across the jungle, back to Cambodia, I saw a whole lot of Russian-made trucks driven by the Vietnamese soldiers carrying heavy guns and stopped them in the jungle, not far from the Thai border. And also they were constructing sort of trail like Ho Chi Minh Trail, but not from north to south, but from that connect the present trail up west, directed to Thailand. I don't know what it means, but you might feel what it means. That's what I saw. And then when I came to the center of Cambodia, I tried again to escape, and I did succeed to escape to Thailand the second time. But before I got to the second time, I stayed at the border for 2 months, and I experienced this shelling by the Vietnamese. When I saw El Santo Lee's slide, I tried to hold my tears because people who hit by the shelling just jumped like that in front of my eye. Yeah, kids, infants, of course, mostly women and children. I'd like to go on a little bit. I know we are running out short of time, but being in charge of leader of the Survivors Association or Association of the Cambodian Survivors, we are trying to get more information from our people at the border, even information from people inside Cambodia, if possible, because we would like to get recent information so we can spread this information to you here, because we hate to hear something wrong, something speculated by the duped media. Now, one brand new military base being built now by the Vietnamese at a coast about 89 or 70 kilometers east of Kampong Sam or Sihanoukville. Yes, by the Vietnamese. A strong military base at the coast, so can be for the Marine, can be for the infantry. And I just said that a trail has been extended up west. Land ownership by private people in Cambodia historically is now banned. Yeah. The main land, very fertile land, is owned by the state, Heng Samrin, which is a puppet. And now is rented to the Vietnamese, the new settlers. Rented to the new settlers. So what it means, they are coming to help us or they are coming to erase our identity, I don't know. If by accident one Cambodian argue with one Vietnamese, you know who the loser and who the winner will be, because the rule is under the Vietnamese communist hand. The aid, international aid, went into Cambodia. According to many letters saying the same thing, since the very beginning, mostly went to the soldiers, Vietnamese soldiers. So your goodwill of helping our suffering civilian people in Cambodia become arm, food and arm to the Vietnamese soldiers to fight back, to kill more people. Anything that needs to be exported must be exported through Vietnam, not to anywhere else like we did before. Any letters you mail in must go straight to Hanoi and then to Saigon before it reached Cambodia. So this is the main information we just got. And the letters, received this morning is a letter from a widow whose father was killed. Was shot dead by a Vietnamese soldier. So they are coming to help us or they are coming to do anything, I don't know. Just a question to you. How do you feel while now, since they are saying, we are coming to help to stop the Holocaust, why there still are hundreds of thousands of Cambodian refugees to the border? They hate to leave their homeland. They hate to be called hopeless or stateless or displaced people. Yeah. And still there are now even more, there are Cambodians fleeing by boat, not only the Vietnamese. There are Cambodian boat people also. Worse than that, the cadre of the Heng Samrin government became deporters, ran away from the Heng Samrin government for any reason, just because they feel that they are not accepted in that society or in that government. Yeah, as a whole, I just like to say that those 500,000 of Cambodian refugees need help because they are stateless and they cannot go back home. Of course, we don't have any home anymore because the home is being taken away from us. And the name Cambodia is not called Kampuchea, which is, I don't like to hear that because the name called by the communists. I would like to call it Cambodia because to call Kampuchea means we lose our Cambodian identity. Thank you for your attention.
Folks, what I'm going to do is call for the coffee break now, and the other third of this program we'll put on after the coffee break. So take your break, and we'll see you back, Kim. Al, did you want your, I think these are your papers here. Did you want them? Are they all yours? All right, folks. We want to give the third speaker on the last panel an opportunity to make his remarks and then go on promptly to the next panel. So we have four people now that I will introduce all together. The first is Sichan Siv. There's a little correction in the program. He's not the United Nations ambassador representing Khmer Rouge. He tells me that he is the chargé. The ambassador has recently passed away. You'll note the rest of it is accurate. He was a high school in Cambodia and imprisoned under the Pol Pot regime. His entire family was killed by the Khmer Rouge. He escaped to Thailand in 76 and came to the United States. He received a Master of International Affairs, not Relations, from Columbia University. Sichan Siv.
Thank you, Mr. Irvine, for the introductions. During the past 2 days, so much has been said about the inaccuracy of the PBS series on Vietnam. I would like to add, however, that the program was extremely misleading and one-sided, giving the North Vietnamese and Viet Cong a glorious picture of a people who fought to liberate their country from foreign domination. The real story was exactly the opposite. At the United Nations Security Council meetings in January 1979, held shortly after the Vietnamese invasion of Cambodia, the Vietnamese and their Soviet bloc allies put forward a moral argument in an effort to justify their actions in Cambodia. They said that the Vietnamese invasion was a humanitarian intervention and that they saw a necessity to stop Pol Pot's violation of human rights. Now, any student of international relations know that humanitarian intervention applies only to a country's action to save its citizen in danger in a foreign land. This can be exemplified by the Israeli raid at Entebbe, the German operation at Mogadishu, the U.S. rescue attempt in Iran, and the U.S. rescue operation in Grenada. In Cambodia, there was no Vietnamese citizen when the Vietnamese communists invaded. All of the former residents were expelled by Lon Nol and Pol Pot, if not exterminated by the latter. On the other hand, it is very laughable to accept the Vietnamese position as a human rights enforcer, while Vietnam herself had a very pure human rights record. Between 1975 and 1978, Canada, the United States, the United Kingdom, Norway, and the International Commission of Jurists brought the human rights violation issue in Cambodia to the United Nations and it was the Soviet bloc that objected to the idea. The fact of the matter is that the North Vietnamese had had an ambitious hegemony over the former French Indochina. Ho Chi Minh, who said that nothing is more precious than freedom and independence, wanted Cambodia, Laos, and Vietnam to come under Hanoi's rule. After the war ended in 1975, the Vietnamese expansionist policy continued. The North Vietnamese moved eastward to occupy Laos and Cambodia. The Vietnamese invasion of Cambodia had received prior blessing from the Soviet Union when Pham Van Dong and Brezhnev signed a treaty on the 2nd of November 1978. A month later, the Vietnamese communists formed a so-called Kampuchea National United Front for National Salvation. On Christmas Day 1978, the Vietnamese communists launched a 200,000-man blitzkrieg against Cambodia. They captured Phnom Penh on the 7th of January 1979 and set up a puppet regime headed by Heng Samrin, their hand-picked leader. A few weeks later, the UN Security Council began debates on the Vietnamese invasion. At the end, 13 members of the council voted to condemn the invasion and to require the Vietnamese forces to be withdrawn from Cambodia. Two voted against, the Soviet Union and Czechoslovakia. In February 1979, the Vietnamese forced a treaty with their puppet. This treaty subjected Cambodia to 25 years of Vietnamese domination. The Vietnamese tried to paint themselves as liberators, but the Cambodian acceptance was short-lived when the Vietnamese began a deliberate policy to colonize Cambodia. They have been emptying Cambodia of its resources, looting the art treasures of Angkor, forcing intermarriages, and the teaching of Vietnamese in Cambodian school, diverting international humanitarian aid to their occupation soldiers. The new Shawcross book testified to the Vietnamese manipulation of international aid to their benefit. And shortly before, my friend Kasi has mentioned about the Vietnamese attitude toward the Cambodians in Cambodia. Now, the Vietnamese communist authorities imposed the resettlement of about 600,000 Vietnamese in Cambodia in the rich areas along the Mekong River, around the Tonle Sap, and other fertile provinces. These civilians are organized into armed family units, and they are protected by extraterritoriality. If we added up this number to the 200,000 occupation soldiers and many more advisors, so-called advisors, the number came close to a million, about one-sixth of the current estimated Cambodian population. These new colonizers, as I mentioned earlier, are protected by extraterritoriality. So just imagine one-sixth of the population, just imagine having 36 million Russians in the United States with extraterritoriality privileges. We know that we cannot change Cambodia's geography. Unlike the French, the Japanese, the Americans, we have been living there for the past 2,000 years. And we are not going to move anywhere. However, we want to live as good neighbors with the Vietnamese and not in a master-slave relationship. Despite the uniquely tragic experience under the Pol Pot area, area, many Cambodians fear the greater danger of Vietnam. In this view, in 1982, the three anti-Vietnamese resistant groups form a coalition government which received the support of 95 countries at the United Nations. And all along, the Vietnamese and the Soviet bloc allies had challenged the Cambodian credentials. Last year, they did not, because they knew that they were going to be defeated. The vote on the Cambodian, in the resolution on Cambodia was 105 for and 23 against. The resolution, like the UN-sponsored declaration of the International Conference of Kampuchea in 1981, requested the withdrawal of Vietnamese forces from Cambodia, to be followed by the setting up of a peacekeeping unit to maintain law and order until internationally supervised free elections can be organized. It would be up to the Cambodians to decide on the form of government they want to choose, they want to have. We think it would be the best interpretation of the people's right to self-determination. Under the leadership of Prime Minister Son Sann, the Khmer People's National Liberation Front, which I belong to, one of the two non-communist parties of the tripartite coalition, feels that it is very important that in any political settlement of the conflict, the main objectives are not just to have the Vietnamese withdrawn, but to prevent the return to Cambodia of a regime not wanted by the Cambodians. We don't want them to choose between two evils. Our position is that we don't want to have any evils among the choices for the Cambodian. I mean to finish in a few minutes. We have no objection to the Heng Samrin regime participation to the process, but they can come only as a party, not as the representative of Cambodia. And the KPLF itself doesn't claim to be the representative of Cambodia. We are just one party of the coalition that is recognized by the United Nations as the legitimate government of Cambodia. We are very much for a new Cambodian government that will be but will follow strictly the principle of good neighborliness, that will not be a threat to Vietnam. In fact, it is inconceivable to view Cambodia as a potential threat to Vietnam. Cambodia is just a small country of 6 million people, and it cannot be a threat to Vietnam with about 50 million people and the third largest standing army in the world. Ken Moorfield mentioned this morning about the determination of the 250,000 Cambodians who live in what we call Free Cambodia. They have rejected, as Ken mentioned this morning, they have rejected the Vietnamese rule, and they don't want to be refugees in foreign countries. On the occupied territory side, the Vietnamese soldiers sent to Cambodia suffer a very low morale, nostalgia, homesickness. They do not understand what they were fighting for, and they are afraid of getting killed for a wrong cause. Cambodia has become Vietnam's Vietnam, and the rate of desertion among the Vietnamese ranks is increasing. There was an evidence of this in the Washington Post yesterday. And for the first time in 5 years, the KPLF inflicted a major defeat upon the Vietnamese in their deadly dry season offensive against the civilian villagers. As you know, the basic concept of a guerrilla warfare is that if you don't lose, you are winning. And we are not just not losing, but we are winning. One third of our forces is permanently operated in nearly half of Cambodia, and we enjoy widespread support among the Cambodian population and the sympathy of many Heng Samrin leaders. On the international arena, Vietnamese is the The Vietnamese regime is getting increasingly isolated. Western Europe, Canada, Japan have denied aid to the Vietnamese until they withdraw their forces from Cambodia. And Vietnam's internal problems are getting out of hand. It is no longer appropriate to view Cambodia as a country of tragedy. Cambodia should be seen as a land of hope, an opportunity to reverse the expansionist course of Soviet-sponsored aggression in Southeast Asia and in the world. Cambodia would become the first country to free itself from communist domination. Well, I can go at great length to discuss the details on the Vietnamese occupation and colonization of Cambodia, but I'll probably need more than 13 hours to discuss this, just the expansionist policy of Vietnam. The PBS series spent only 11 seconds to talk about the Vietnamese invasion of Cambodia. In my view, the PBS series on Vietnam was an insult to the heroism and patriotism of the American and South Vietnamese soldiers, to the Cambodians and the Laotian. It reflected the moral corruption of the apologists for Vietnam, who wanted to cover up their guilt during the war. During the war years, they gave themselves a license to misinform and disinform the American public, and they deceived those of us who know the real story. Thank you very much.